politics, entertainment, news, and much, much more. On What Does Parent Think? The show begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Hello, hello, everyone. So for this week, we're going to give you all a special treat in that not only are we going to have episode 15 of the show, but we're also going to have episode 16. But this time I'm doing it solo. And while episode 15 was a very fun episode, I always want to have something political every week. And this week we had something big with the Democratic National Convention. The Republican National Convention is next week. We'll definitely bring that to you. But I want to take time to explain that. And then also along with that, I will also explain what's going on right now with mail-in ballots. So without further ado, I will be breaking down all 4 days. So why don't we get started with day number one? So overall, with all the days, this is not just specifically for day number one. It was pretty built up of pretty much a bunch of standard type speeches of, you know, Donald Trump is bad. Joe Biden is a decent guy. That's why you should vote for him. That was the majority of speeches. So I'm like, for each day, I'm just going to give you the speeches that were important to me. And that's all. So like I said, with day number one, it was really cool for day number one and really all the days to see the diversity that they were able to bring together and just the different people who knew Joe Biden, who spoke, who they had represented on screen. I thought that was really cool. But for the speakers on day number one specifically, none of the speakers really mattered other than Michelle Obama, of course, the wife of Barack Obama himself, and also the beloved former first lady, and then also Bernie Sanders, who made the case on why Biden had one of the most progressive platforms out of any candidate. And for those of you all who know, Bernie Sanders was the progressive guy in the primary. This is important because there is a large growing progressive movement in the country. And we've talked about it before on the show. And it was important to allow Bernie Sanders to not only have time during this night to speak, but he came back on during the other nights for small parts, but to really show his support because he really was the runner up. And I do appreciate that Biden's policy started to get a little bit progressive in things like education, universal pre-K and all that. So I do appreciate that. But other than that, there were a lot of paint-by-the-numbers speakers like John Kasich, who is the former Republican governor for Ohio. And when I really saw him speaking, they had a number of other Republicans. I was like, what is really the point of trying to get Republicans to come over to the Democratic side at this point in? Pretty much, if you're a Trump supporter, you're going to support Trump because you love him. If you don't like Trump or you like Joe Biden, you're going to support him because, you know, you don't like Trump or you really like Joe Biden. So I'm just like, what's the point of even giving him time to speak when more time could be going to people in the progressive movement, like people from the Squad or any of the number of the progressive people like Cori Bush or Jamal Bowman, who just won their primaries. And even with John Kasich, some of his philosophies fundamentally are different than the Democratic Party. So like, what real Republicans are you going to win over? For example, according to CNN, in 2016, John Kasich signed a bill blocking the state from signing contracts for health services with any organization or provider that promotes or performs non-therapeutic abortions. This basically would defund the Planned Parenthood centers in Ohio. And as I'm sure many of you all know, Democrats, at least on the surface, they're for abortion and Planned Parenthood clinics. So again, my real question is, why invite somebody like this on if his philosophies are fundamentally different from the Democratic Party's? I also want to point out that on the first night, it was very, again, just like monotone overall. And I actually think day one was one of the weakest nights, again, other than Bernie Sanders and Michelle Obama. So let's move on to night number two. This was a night for speakers like Jill Biden, Joe Biden's wife, AOC, Ocasio-Cortez, Chuck Schumer, who is the minority leader in the Senate, and then also Bill Clinton, the former president. This night was mostly about nominating Joe Biden, and there are a few things I want to explain with this. So one of the most powerful speakers was definitely Jill Biden, Joe Biden's wife. She did a great job on this night by really showing the weight of what everyone is going through. If you saw her speech, you saw that she spoke in an empty classroom, and that's what so many American families are going through right now, with the uncertainty and not being able to send their kids back to school. And you know, they did a montage before showing Joe Biden's family life with Jill, and I think that did a really good job at humanizing Joe in a way that I had never really seen before, because I'm going to be honest, I didn't really know Joe Biden's story before. So I really did appreciate it, and this is something we're going to see again on night four, which I literally just got done watching. But with night two, I really did appreciate hearing from his wife, seeing her perspective on him and his family life. Now, also with night two, it is extremely important that I break down Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's video and how she nominated Bernie Sanders, because I think that a lot of the mainstream media was confused about this. And even herself, after she did it, she went on Twitter to explain it. So what she did was not snubbing Joe Biden. Don't let anybody tell you this. Let me explain. So what she did, first of all, I'll say, is an honorary symbolic type thing that is done for conventions. As explained in a wonderful article by Vox, any candidate that meets a certain threshold of delegates within the primary, this number has to be 300 delegates, and Bernie Sanders had over that, you are eligible to be nominated for the ticket. And Bernie Sanders basically invited AOC and then also auto worker union leader named Bob King to nominate him. So it was just a very symbolic thing. Everybody knew that Joe Biden was going to be the nominee. So again, it was just a symbolic type thing. So moving right along, let's go on to day number three. This was another night of standard speeches. Again, I'm saving you a lot of time if you didn't watch the conventions. A lot of it was Joe Biden is a decent man, vote for him, and Donald Trump is bad. And I wish they did, like, as they went on, they started to focus on policy more, and especially in Joe Biden's speech and in Bernie Sanders' speech from day one. I do really think they focused on policy, which is good, because people want to know, what are you going to do to help my life right now? Because I'm struggling of either I can't pay rent or I can't put food on the table. And I think that's very important, because not only do you have to show people what you're going to bring them out of within the Trump administration, but you have to set a path forward for people's lives so they can really know, okay, where am I going to go to next? And I think that's very important for the Democratic Party. I hope that they learned their lesson from 2016. in charting that path forward and in what they're going to want to accomplish for the nation. Now, on this night, you had two people in Barack Obama, the former president, and the vice president nominee, Kamala Harris, the senator from California. Now, Obama is wildly popular, and he's a great speech giver. But this speech was really used to say, like, hey, if you all trust me and love me so much, if you trusted my nomination of Joe Biden as my vice president all those years ago, well, now I'm asking you to trust me in saying that he should be president. Now, while he is a great speaker, the speech was all right. You know, again, very elegant. I appreciated seeing that from a national figure, and it felt like he did put some emotion into it. One of the best lines in the speech is when he said, Donald Trump hasn't grown into the job because he can't. Because he can't. And this line was so powerful because Donald Trump, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir with saying this, he's not mentally capable of achieving the job that he was put in for. And he's done, I'll tell you this, he's done such a great job at tricking all of his supporters into thinking he's there to helping him out. But the lack of mental capacity, where he was bragging about a simple mental test, or his lack of morals, where in interviews he said, like, yeah, people just died, there's nothing really we can do about it, or his lack of effective leadership when he just goes to golf, or with even COVID and letting all these deaths die, these deaths happen, and not being effective enough in leadership to do anything about it, really does show you he's just not capable of doing it. And that's why he needs to be out of office. And, you know, I have my own problems with Joe Biden. Joe Biden is up there in age too. And, you know, he's had a couple of mental slips sometimes, and I wish that he was more progressive. But I know that Joe Biden is going to be extremely, when compared to Trump, better, because at least you'll have a decent human being in office. So I think that's important to know. But Obama gave a good speech. With Kamala Harris's speech, she was kind of dry, and I felt like she focused too much on herself and her accomplishments. And this is more so a speech about what you want for the nation, or what you will try to accomplish policy-wise, because all of this surrounds policy. You know, you obviously want a president and vice president who's charismatic, understanding, but what policies are they going to bring forth to the table? And I, you know, pretty much after she was just talking about herself, I pretty much mentally checked out. And then last but not least, we have night four. This was a very cringeworthy night, especially from the host. They had a different host each day. And in the beginning, I was talking about the diversity of the convention. On the first night, and these were all actresses that they had. They had a Latina actress on the first night, two African-American women on the second and third night. And for this final night, they had a white woman actress. Her name is slipping my mind, but she was very cringeworthy in the jokes. And that was pretty much standard throughout each night, is that there were a lot of cringeworthy moments of fakeness and just reading off a teleprompter and no real emotion in people's speeches. But I did like how they had two documentaries in this one. One for short documentaries for John Lewis, the fellow Fiskite. So I'm always going to appreciate that, and really rising up to make good trouble. And then also for Joe Biden's deceased son, Bo Biden. I really did feel that, and the way that he spoke about his father and looked up to him, again, it helped to humanize Joe Biden. I think that's actually been one of the most effective things of this convention, is that it really did humanize Joe Biden through those flashbacks, through the people that knew him. I think it did a really good job, and it definitely made me more sympathetic to wanting Joe Biden in office. Joe Biden had a good speech. I really did enjoy his speech. Not only did he talk about some policies on how he's going to create jobs, the most vital thing he talked about is what he's going to do when he first gets in office to handle COVID-19. COVID has affected my life. It's affected my family's life. It affected my friend's life. It's affected so many Americans and people around the world lives. And that's one of the most devastating things. And the president doesn't have a plan right now. But I did appreciate that Joe said what he would do on day one. And so for that, I can't knock it from him. He was very compassionate in his speech. You felt for him. And then also, the speech made me feel like I wanted to be united as a country and really pave a way forward. Now, what that future is, we'll have to find out. And really, as my final point, and we're going to transition into mail-in ballots after this, is that when I'm going to cross my fingers and say, when Joe Biden is elected in the office, we as the people of the United States really have to hold his feet to the fire and making sure that some of the policies he's talked about, especially some of the more progressive policies with education, student loan debt with that, or healthcare expanding, Obamacare. One day I would eventually like to see a Medicare for All type format enacted in the United States. We really do have to hold his feet to the fire and making sure, like, hey, we elected you into office because we thought you were better than Trump, but actually act like it and make sure you're fighting Congress and working with Congress to get things passed. Because Joe Biden has been a senator for a long time before he was vice president. So I want him to put some of those connections to use and actually get some meaningful legislation passed. And also things like the Justice and Policing Act. We haven't heard a lot about that lately, but getting rid of things like qualified immunity for police officers so they can be sued or processed or taken to court in civil cases, I think is very important to get passed. So the last thing I want to talk about for today deals with mail-in ballots. In the middle of pandemic, as has been stressed in so many things lately, the thing has come up about mail-in ballots and the new Postmaster General and Donald Trump wanting to defund the Postal Service with mail-in ballots. It's a lot of things. So what I'm here to do for you, family, is to break that all down and make sure that you all understand all the necessary information. As always, I've included the facts with this, so let's get started. I've already explained the extreme importance in voting and why we need to actively be participating in politics and making good trouble, as our brother John Lewis once said. Now, for more information on voting within your state, it's important for you to visit your Secretary of State's website, because they are the ones with each individual state who are responsible for making sure the elections are efficient and in charge of voting. So please visit your website. I'm from Michigan. I know that I can be registered online, which I already am. Register to vote, and I know that I can completely vote by mail, which I already did my primary a few weeks ago, and my ballot for the general election November 3rd will be sent to me as well. Now, to help you with your voting journey, I want to give some stats from the website, The Hill. Love their news website. I always listen to them. They have a YouTube show as well. But breaking down each state in what certain states allow. So these are the states that automatically send mail-in ballots to each registered voter. So those states are Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. Again, these are states that automatically send mail-in ballots to each registered voter. Next is states where you can apply for a mail-in ballot and don't need an excuse. And this is a long one. Alaska, Arizona, California, D.C., Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Vermont, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. Again, these are states where you can apply for a mail-in ballot and don't have to give an excuse. And then last but not least, we have states where you can apply for a mail-in ballot, but you have to give an excuse. This includes Alabama, Arkansas, Connecticut, Delaware, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Mississippi, Missouri, New Hampshire, New York, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and West Virginia. Now, I said all this because it's extremely important for you to find your state and see, like, okay, what do I have to do to vote? Whether has the registration deadline passed? If it hasn't, how do I get registered to vote? And I'm saying all this because I care about my democracy, and I want you to care about our democracy and making sure that you are registered to vote, registered to go, and that you're making informed policy decisions and really holding your politicians' feet to the fire. Because it's important not just to vote for Joe because you hate Trump, but you want to vote Joe in because you see either some type of policy that you agree with and think that is better for America, or even simply because you want a decent person in to where, like, hey, maybe they'll listen to a policy I'm interested in if I get connected with the right people. Now, in addition to this, I absolutely have to explain what's up with the post office and Donald Trump. Now, with Donald Trump, as powerful as he thinks he is and as powerful as he wants to become, he does not have the sole power to defund or fund an institution. Congress, according to the Constitution, has the power of the purse, and while the president can definitely have a say in on policy, he cannot fund or defund mail-in voting. The Postmaster General is also not directly under the control of the president. Despite being a Trump supporter, which the current Postmaster General is, he was a Trump donor, a board of governors consisting up to 9 governors appointed by the president, and then they have to be confirmed by the Senate, chooses the Postmaster General according to the official U.S. Postal website. Also, according to USA Today, the Postmaster General said that he will pause some of the operational changes to the agency until after the November election. And if you remember a few weeks ago when I did another podcast by myself, I talked about some of the changes that the Postmaster General wanted to do to the post office. In a statement, he said, "To avoid even the appearance of any impact on the election mail, I am suspending these initiatives until after the election is concluded," end quote. And really, he was doing this because 20 states were suing him because of these changes. Some of these changes he wanted to make included changing Postal Service retail hours, removal of mail processing equipment and blue collection boxes, and the closing mail processing facilities. Obvious things that would have slowed down election mail. And really, that's all the information I have for you all. I hope that I was able to explain it well and you really did learn something. Obviously, keep on doing your own research so we can really learn and grow together. And just as a real closing thing, as big of a baby as Donald Trump is, if he really wanted to secure a fair election, he would actually advocate to fund the post office more by Congress so that the election could be carried out fairly. But he's such a big baby. He knows that there's a possibility of him losing, and he just can't handle it. So that's why he constantly cries and whines about everything. But that's all I have to give to you tonight, you all. Thank you, as always, for listening to What Does Parent Think? And we will see you next time on another episode. Stay blessed.
Thank you for listening to What Does Parent Think? Don't forget to like and subscribe. And also, don't forget to keep on thinking.